if you buy free-range chicken or eggs, you know, you're usually paying a premium for a very specific, very comforting story.
Right, the whole idyllic farm image.
Exactly. You're buying the idea of a happy bird that gets to roam outside, peck at the grass, and just live in harmony with nature.
Which is what we all want, really.
Yeah, but what that picturesque marketing on the carton doesn't tell you is that nature is essentially a microscopic war zone.
That is a very accurate way to put it.
Right. So today, our mission for this deep dive is to look at the hidden, frankly horrific costs of letting farm animals live out in the open.
Because the moment you remove the artificial barriers of like an indoor farm, you don't just free the bird.
No. You introduce that bird to a complex, completely untamed ecosystem that's just absolutely teeming with opportunistic parasites.
And the scale of that exposure is massive, especially when we look at global regions where smallholder farming isn't just some niche market, but, you know, the absolute backbone of the agricultural economy.
For sure. Our focus today is a really fascinating cross-sectional study published in 2026 in the Australian Journal of Agricultural, Veterinary, and Animal Sciences.
Yeah, the researchers spent their time examining free-range chicken flocks in Cao Bang Province, which is a mountainous region in northern Vietnam.
Okay, let's unpack this. As global consumer demand continues to drive up free-range farming, we're inadvertently creating, well, a perfect storm for environmental pathogens.
Perfect, because the birds are outside, which we love from an animal welfare perspective, obviously.
Obviously. But that exposes them to threats that factory-farmed birds behind concrete walls rarely, if ever, encounter.
And the specific culprit we're analyzing today is a parasite called the chigger mite.
Which, depending on where you live, you might have heard called harvest mites or red bugs, right?
Exactly. They belong to the family Trombiculidae, and I mean, they are formidable.
So to really grasp the threat they pose to these flocks, can you paint a picture of what these mites actually are? How do they operate?
Well, it defies how most of us assume parasites operate. A chigger mite has seven distinct life stages.
Seven. That seems like a lot.
It is. They go from an egg to a pre-larva to a larva through three separate nymphal stages, and finally they become an adult.
Okay.
But the critical distinction here is that out of those seven stages, only the larval stage is actually parasitic.
Wait, really? So for the vast majority of their lives, they aren't actually bothering anybody.
Not at all. For most of their existence, they are entirely free-living soil
So
dwellers.
they're just like hanging out in the dirt.
Pretty much. They feed on decaying organic matter or the eggs of other tiny soil insects. They have absolutely no interest in animals.
That's kind of like rowdy teenagers. So it's only during this one specific youthful phase that they become a problem.
Yes, that larval window. That is the only time they require a vertebrate host to survive and fuel their transition into the next stage of life.
Looking at the mechanics of this, I was genuinely disturbed to learn how they actually feed.
It is definitely not for the faint of heart.
Right, because when I think of a mite or a tick, I imagine a tiny bug that bites the surface of the skin and acts like a microscopic vampire, you know, just sucking blood.
That's the standard assumption, yeah.
But these chigger larvae don't do that. They don't just take a bite. They act more like microscopic miners pouring acid into the ground.
That is an incredibly accurate way to describe it. It's a process called extraoral digestion.
Extraoral digestion.
Yeah, so instead of chewing, they secrete highly specialized digestive enzymes directly into the chicken's skin. And those enzymes literally dissolve the host's skin cells into a liquid smoothie.
That is horrifying.
It gets worse. As the chicken's immune system tries to fight this off, the surrounding tissue hardens, forming this microscopic tube called a stylostome.
Okay, so the skin is reacting to the acid.
Right, and then the chigger uses that hardened tube, basically like a straw, to drink the dissolved, liquefied skin tissue.
Oh, man. And they don't stay near the surface either, do they?
No, they burrow very deeply. They push past the outer protective layer, the stratum corneum, and dig all the way down through the stratum granulosum,
Wait, they go that deep.
all the way down to the stratum germinativum, which is where brand new skin cells are being generated.
And they are doing this in massive, coordinated groups, right? The study notes they attach in dense clusters.
Yes, we are talking about hundreds, sometimes thousands of larvae grouping together in a single localized area on the bird.
Thousands on one bird.
Yes. And they are strategic about where they set up those clusters. They specifically seek out areas where the chicken skin is thin and relatively unprotected.
Like where?
You'll primarily find them on the breast, the inner thighs, underneath the wings, and around the
So the
fluffs.
fluffs.
Yeah, that's the agricultural term for those very soft, downy feathers near the rear of the bird.
Oh, I see.
They need that softer tissue because their enzymes really struggle to penetrate thicker, calloused skin.
Wow. So looking at the data from the 856 chickens the researchers examined across Vietnam, I was shocked to see the detection rate.
It's very revealing data.
Yeah, they identified two specific chigger species causing all this damage, Utrombicula, which many, and Neoscongastia gallinarum.
Which are a mouthful to say.
Definitely. But they found them in all four of the surveyed locations with a 100% detection frequency.
Right.
Meaning these mites aren't just an outbreak spreading from farm to farm. They are a permanent, guaranteed feature of the dirt.
Exactly. They are completely endemic to the local soil ecology. You just cannot separate the farm from the presence of the mite.
So if the soil is essentially booby-trapped with these larvae waiting for a meal, who is actually triggering the traps?
Yeah.
Like, is every chicken equally at risk?
Well, the study found an overall infestation rate of about 40.65%.
So roughly 4 out of every 10 birds had an active, visible cluster of these burrowing mites.
Yes, but the breakdown by age is one of the most vital insights for farmers to understand.
This is where it gets really interesting to me. The numbers show a very steep upward trajectory based on how old the bird is.
They do.
Chickens under 3 months old had an infection rate of 32.28%.
Right.
But then birds between 3 and 6 months were at 41.99%. And by the time you look at the oldest chickens, the mature birds, over 6 months old, that rate jumps to 48.26%.
So nearly half the adult flock was infested.
But wait, I have to push back on the logic of this. Wouldn't younger, smaller birds with developing immune systems be the easiest targets?
You would think so.
Right, because they have incredibly soft, thin skin. So why are the fully grown, mature birds getting hit the hardest?
If we were only looking at biological vulnerability, you would be absolutely right. Chicks are definitely more fragile.
So what's happening?
Parasites don't just exploit biology, they exploit behavior. This data perfectly illustrates how behavioral ecology dictates risk.
Oh, okay.
It comes down to how different chickens utilize the physical space at the farm.
So what are the older birds doing differently than the chicks?
They are sitting still. Think about the daily routine of a mature laying hen compared to, like, a frantic young chick.
Oh, right. Chicks are just constantly running around.
Exactly. They're in near constant motion, darting around, foraging, rarely staying in one place for long.
And the older birds?
Older chickens, especially those producing eggs, spend massive portions of their day completely stationary. They sit in nesting boxes, they take long dust baths, and they have established resting spots on the ground.
Oh, I see. So the chicks are moving targets, but the older birds are essentially parking themselves like a stationary vehicle right on top of a landmine.
Exactly.
By sitting in the organic litter for hours, they give the larvae all the time in the world to latch on and start dissolving their skin.
Yes. The longer a bird remains in physical contact with infested soil, the higher the probability of accumulating a massive cluster of mites. It's all about prolonged environmental exposure.
Okay, so if sitting still is the real danger, that instantly makes me wonder about the gender divide. You have hens stuck on nests laying eggs all day, while roosters are out patrolling the yard. So did the researchers see a massive spike in female infections?
What's fascinating here is that in this specific study, the difference between hens and roosters was practically non-existent.
Really?
Yeah, hens were at 41.38% and roosters were at 39.90%. It wasn't statistically significant.
Huh. That seems counterintuitive based on the nesting thing.
Well, the authors point out that if you zoom out and look at the broader scientific literature across different countries, the data on sex differences is incredibly contradictory.
Contradictory in what way? Like it flips.
Yeah. In some past studies within Vietnam, researchers did find significantly higher rates in hens, which perfectly aligns with the nesting behavior we just discussed.
Right.
But if you look at studies of free-range systems in other parts of the world, you frequently see the exact opposite. Roosters suffering from much higher infestation rates.
How does that make any sense? If nesting causes the exposure, why would roosters get it worse anywhere else?
Because of how roosters operate in different environments, roosters act as the flock's protectors, right?
Right, they're always on guard.
So they roam further from the coop, they explore the perimeter, and they actively patrol through taller grasses, dense brush and unmanaged vegetation.
Oh, and that's where the bugs are.
Exactly. In certain ecological setups, that tall brush is exactly where the highest concentration of chigger larvae is waiting.
That is a brilliant insight. It means that the biological sex of the bird is largely irrelevant to the mite itself.
Completely irrelevant.
What actually matters is the intersection of behavior and microgeography. The mites are just waiting in a specific zone, and whoever spends the most time in that zone gets attacked.
Which means the physical layout of the farm dictates the infection. Precisely.
Which perfectly leads into understanding the geography of this. The researchers didn't just treat Cao Bang province as one giant identical farm.
No, they broke the data down by four distinct communes, and the geographic variation is massive.
Yeah, let me list the breakdown. You have Vinquang at 31.84%.
Right.
Then Ditam at 33.86%, Hangdao at 43.75%, and Chutrin peaking at 51.69%.
That is a huge swing.
Right. If they are all raising the same type of birds in the same general province, what causes a 20% swing in parasite loads between neighboring communities?
It comes down to microclimates. While the broader weather patterns might be similar, the localized conditions on a specific farm dictate whether the mites survive and reproduce or dry up and die.
Like what kind of conditions?
Variations in canopy cover from trees, how well the soil drains after a rainstorm, the type of ground vegetation.
Oh, sure.
Even how often farmers clear out decaying organic litter. All of these factors create tiny, localized pockets of extreme danger or relative safety for the flock.
And the data shows that this environment isn't static either. It changes violently with the calendar.
The seasonal spikes are definitely impossible to ignore here.
Right. Yeah, during the winter, the infection rate drops to its lowest point, around 31.96%.
Right.
But in the summer, it absolutely explodes to 51.94%.
It's a massive jump.
With spring right behind it at 45.71%. I mean, I know bugs generally like warm weather, but what is the specific biological mechanism driving such a massive population boom in the summer?
To understand that, we have to look at the anatomy of the chigger mite.
Okay.
Unlike certain beetles or mature ticks that have thick, waxy, highly developed exoskeletons, chigger mites have very thin cuticles.
So they're delicate.
Extremely. They are incredibly susceptible to desiccation, meaning they dry out and die very easily if the air around them lacks moisture.
So they literally need the humidity just to keep their bodies intact.
Yes. And a northern Vietnamese summer provides the ultimate combination for their survival. High ambient temperatures and intense humidity.
Oh, that makes perfect sense.
The heat accelerates their metabolic rate, meaning the adults mate faster, the females lay eggs faster. And the incubation period for those eggs is drastically shortened.
It's a chain reaction.
Combine that rapid reproduction with a humid environment that prevents the larva from drying out while they wait in the soil, and you have the perfect recipe for a parasite population explosion.
So a hot, humid summer turns the farm's topsoil into a high-speed incubator.
Basically, yes.
Suddenly, there are millions more larvae crawling around exactly when the chickens are naturally spending more time outside foraging. It's a brutal convergence of timelines.
It is, and it raises an important question about the real-world impact.
Right. So what does this all mean? We've established the mechanics of the infestation, but we have to look at the cascading consequences. What does a 50% summer infestation rate actually do to a smallholder farm?
Well, why should you care beyond the fact that it's just a gross bug? Because the damage extends far beyond temporary skin irritation. When you have thousands of larvae simultaneously pumping digestive enzymes into a bird's skin, it triggers massive localized inflammation. Okay. The host develops severe weeping lesions and agonizing dermatitis.
Which obviously causes the animal tremendous distress and pain.
Constant distress. And from an agricultural and economic perspective, the toll is devastating.
Because it affects the product.
Yeah. Those lesions completely ruin the carcass quality, which drastically reduces the market value of the bird. For a small family farm, that is a direct hit to their livelihood.
That's terrible.
Furthermore, the persistent stress of fighting off the infestation diverts the bird's caloric energy away from physical growth and egg production. The flock becomes stunted.
And I imagine having hundreds of open, dissolved wounds on your skin compromises your immune system, too.
Exactly. The skin is the primary barrier against the outside world. By burrowing through it, the mites create open highways for secondary bacterial and viral infections to enter the bloodstream.
Oh, wow. So it's not just the mite?
No, a mite problem very quickly spirals into a systemic, flock-wide health crisis.
So how do you fix it? The study does offer solutions, but looking at them, I realize that protecting a free-range flock requires a completely different mindset than protecting an indoor flock.
No, absolutely.
The researchers suggest the targeted use of acaricides. Can you explain what those are?
Sure. Acaricides are specialized chemical compounds designed specifically to target and kill ticks and mites.
Okay.
Unlike broad-spectrum antibiotics, acaricides typically work by disrupting the unique nervous system of the arachnid, causing paralysis and death. They can be applied directly to the bird or sometimes to the environment.
But the researchers don't just rely on chemicals, do they?
No, they emphasize improved sanitation, clearing away organic debris, managing the brush, and maintaining completely dry resting areas.
So protecting the chickens isn't just about veterinary medicine, it's practically about doing aggressive yard work and landscaping.
That is the fundamental reality of free-range agriculture. When the animals live in the ecosystem, environmental management is veterinary management.
Wow.
You cannot treat the animal in isolation. You have to manage the soil, the shade, and the moisture levels of the pasture itself.
However, the authors of the study are transparent about the limitations of their own research, which
Yeah,
is a mark of good science.
definitely.
They point out that while this baseline data is crucial, their methodology for identifying the mites needs an upgrade. They relied on morphological identification.
Yes. They looked at the collected mites under a microscope and used taxonomic keys to identify them based on their physical shape, the arrangement of their microscopic hairs, and their leg structure.
Which seems reasonable until you realize how incredibly small and similar these things are.
Exactly. The family Trumbaculidae is full of what we call cryptic species.
Cryptic species.
Yeah, these are species that are genetically distinct and might behave differently, but visually they look virtually identical even under high magnification.
Oh, so they could easily mix them up.
Right. Relying purely on human eyesight to count microscopic hairs leaves a lot of room for misidentification.
So what is the fix for future studies?
The modern scientific standard requires DNA barcoding.
Okay, so getting to genetics.
Yes, by extracting the genetic material and sequencing specific genes, researchers can definitively prove exactly which species of mite is present.
That makes sense.
It completely removes the guesswork of morphology and allows for highly targeted treatment strategies. They also noted that their statistical analysis primarily looked at one variable at a time, like age or season, in isolation.
Right, but the real world doesn't work in isolation.
Exactly. A multivariable analysis, which looks at how age, sex, season, and geography all interact simultaneously, would provide a much clearer picture of the true risk factors.
Even with those limitations, though, this study is incredibly illuminating. Let's trace the path we've taken today.
It's been a journey.
We started by dismantling that idyllic image of a chicken pecking in a sunny green pasture. We zoomed all the way down into the dirt to discover the horrific, acid-secreting burrowing habits of chigger larvae.
A horrifying image.
Truly. Then we explored the behavioral ecology, realizing that older birds get attacked the most simply because they sit still long enough to become targets.
Right.
And finally, we looked at the environmental triggers, seeing how the high humidity of a Vietnamese summer turns the soil into a massive incubator, forcing farmers to act as both veterinarians and landscapers.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, it really requires us to mature our perspective on food production.
How so?
While we are actively shifting society toward more natural farming methods, but nature is not a sanitized playground. It is a raw, highly competitive ecosystem.
Yeah, we forget that.
When we demand that our livestock live in the open environment, we must take responsibility for managing the natural endemic pathogens that inhabit that environment. Smallholder farmers need support, education, and highly targeted, seasonally adapted strategies to maintain animal welfare under these conditions.
And that leaves you with a really profound question to mull over the next time you're standing in the grocery store aisle.
What's that?
If the global push for cage-free, free-range agriculture actually exposes these animals to a much wider array of painful, naturally occurring environmental parasites, how do we as consumers balance our desire for natural living conditions with the harsh realities of animal welfare and health?
It is a profound friction between our ideals and biological reality.
When does back to nature go too far? Keep asking those hard questions, keep looking beneath the surface of the labels, and we will catch you on the next deep dive.